Running a Shopify store and drowning in shipping chaos? ShipStation can fix this for you. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels with advanced automation, batch processing, and shipping discounts that a single platform just doesn't offer. Like discounts up to 90% off major carriers. See how ShipStation can make shipping for your Shopify store better. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
My name is Michael Bailey, and you're listening to the EDP Formula One podcast.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the EDP Formula One podcast, back post-China with the fun and games in Shanghai. We've got the old podcast crew back to talk about it as well. What a fine crew we have, too. We've got Perry Hamilton here.
Hello.
Hello, Ped. Beard's looking good.
Thanks. Yeah. It's not a visual medium, podcasting, but no, it is. Full and ginger.
I might take a picture this time. I've been meaning to take a picture for the
little
Twitter
cheeky,
feed.
Little cheeky live pod tweetage.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we'll do that.
Go for it.
Good to see your beard, anyway.
Thanks. Is it good to see me as well?
Or? Well, I'm not so sure about these flip-flops. Are we in flip-flop weather yet?
It is definitely flip-flop weather. I was walking... we had this conversation with... Yeah. I won't ruin the introduction, but Steve Rust is here as well.
I haven't written an introduction.
Fine. But Steve and I were talking. It's warm on the walk here. It's quite warm. I think it's definitely flip-flop weather.
That's fair enough. I haven't actually left the building today, so I couldn't tell you what it's like outside, but I'm sure it's lovely. Steve Rust is here, as delightfully introduced by Ped.
Hello.
How's things, Steve?
Good, yeah.
Did you enjoy the race?
Yeah, another good result. Well, for me at least, being a Hamilton fan.
There we go. See, let's get cut straight to the chase. I love it. Richard Baxter's here too. Hello, Richard.
Good evening.
How's things?
Yes, very good, thank you.
You had I don't know if you listened to the podcast, but you had a very good opening round of predictions.
I didn't do too bad. I did listen back to it.
Yeah, there he is. This is competition like nothing else this season. It's a bit crazy. I'm a bit scared, to be honest, of finishing last. Okay, then. So China, Shanghai. It was a bit of a mix-up with the qualifying, but not so much the race. In fact, the race didn't necessarily float my boat. I thought it was a bit run-of-the-mill. Was that a fair thing to say?
It sort of reminded me a bit of... was the one that was not the Malaysia was the really interesting one, wasn't it, with all the racing? The one
Bahrain was brilliant.
Malaysia, that's the one I was thinking. It was sort of fairly similar to that, really, wasn't it? You know, it was probably what we expected result wise at least, with probably the first two spots at the podium, and then the rest of it was, I mean, my notes consist of about half a dozen lines.
Cool. Well, at least Steve, you made notes.
I was about to say, Steve made notes. I didn't make notes.
Well ahead of the game.
I thought it was an all right race. It seemed to go quickly for me, and I found that quite surprising. When races are a little less interesting, they tend to drag. But this one didn't. I suppose it's... I mean, I quite like the Chinese circuit, and I think I might be alone in that. I don't know, or I might not be in a huge amount of company.
I quite like all these early races, to be
honest.
Yeah,
I quite
circuits.
Like it. And I think there are some nice bits of it, because it requires just some really nice tight driving. It requires a lot of apexes. There's a lot of corners where you've really got to hold and wait and wait and wait, and then get on the power. And of course, with the new power units and the amount of torque they've got, you now have to wait even longer, and you're just seeing people find that point, find that line, and then push it that little bit further. So in terms of, from a technical standpoint of watching some wonderful driving, it was a very good race, very enjoyable. But in terms of wheel-to-wheel action, it was a little bit lacking.
It was a little bit short. Great point from Ped. A lot of the drivers had to fight with their cars around this circuit, maybe apart from Lewis, who seemed to be entirely at one with his car, which seems to be entirely out on its own, really.
Well, that's when he's had the confidence. That's his third race he's won, and he's obviously full of confidence. I mean, you've got the confidence in your car and yourself, and, you know, it's unstoppable. But... is it? Who knows? Coming up, but
yeah, I mean, it completely passed. Well, it didn't pass me by. It went, when I realised it was a hat trick of wins already, I was like, "Crumbs, where's that come from? Has he really already won three?" But I mean, that's the domination of that car, and I suppose, in a way, almost exemplified as well by Rosberg, who had a pretty nasty early part of the race. No telemetry, was getting a bit annoyed, and still managed to comfortably stick the car second.
And look utterly deflated and annoyed at the end of it.
Yeah. Never has a man looked so defeated after two podiums, I suppose. Yeah. Fair to say, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly right. But then it's because he knows what car he's got underneath him, and he knows he should be doing better. It amazed me. It was a jinx, and he should never have said it, but he said it on the formation lap, he said, absolutely perfect start, guys. Perfect start. And I just thought, yeah, just watch him go backwards.
Mark Webber was good at that. I think he would be good at talking things up like that.
Mark Webber just wasn't very good at starts. Well, towards the end of his career, I just don't think Mark Webber was very good at starts.
But I mean, he was very bothered at the end of his career, didn't he? So is it all over? I mean, I'm trying to, you know, Lewis has got a good lead. If not the points ahead of Rosberg, he has psychologically, I think, hit some pretty strong blows against him. What do you reckon?
I think Rosberg did have it. He still had a good drive, because if you look where he was on fourth on the grid and he dropped back, I think it was about sixth or seventh with the contact as well on the first corner. But he had a good drive to get back up there. And I think rather than being down, I think if he looks back and thinks, OK, I managed to pass everyone, and he even got the fastest lap, I believe, as well. And yeah, he did, you know, more than half a second quicker than Lewis's fastest lap as well. So he's got to think, I'm a quick driver, all I've got to do is do the job on qualifying. And if he's on the front row again, he can easily win. I think he just needs to get the confidence back and, you know, take strides forward.
Yeah.
Prove where he can.
The interesting thing about Lewis, I think, in these three races, the dramas seem to have gone. I don't know if that's because he's got so much. Calm. And maybe at the start of the season, you thought, well, you know what, he's got a rick in here, or something's just going to go wrong for him, which he did in the first race.
Yeah.
The next three has just been.
Yeah. You can hear he's so calm on the radio now, but you could argue anyone in the same position who's not been winning that much now has a chance to just win every race is probably going to be more calmer really anyway, because there's less to complain about. But with Rosberg, just going back to him, what I found interesting was is how frustrated did he seem in that car on Saturday. Yeah, he was pulling all kinds of mistakes in Q3, and that's probably why he ended up in the position he started in the race.
Qualifying was good fun, actually, wasn't it? It was nice to have a bit of wet quali.
Yeah, no, it's good. And then you always see that sort of moment of the back marker teams are going to go out on their inters because they think they're going to be the
ones. Let's give it a go.
Yeah, let's give it a go. What have we got to lose, kind of thing? And I really quite like that. And I think everyone did all right. I think most people got their strategies right for it. I think I'd still rather see rain in a race than I would in quali, because I think it really does impact on what you can and can't do, and you really see who the people that have control of their vehicles are, and you see the people that are really willing to push the envelope and sort of put that toe just over the line, which I think is good. But you know, a little bit of wet weather, that's happened a couple of times this season now already, hasn't it? It's been absolutely wet on the Saturday, and then at the exact same time the next day it's been
bone dry,
gloriously absolutely fine, which by the way I was absolutely very much upset about, because I seem to recall one of my predictions was that we would have a wet race. I actually specified race, unlike Steve, who specified rain at some point over the year.
But he did,
I think,
until you badgered him to get into the point.
Not the year.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I know. Well, no. Originally, it was the race weekend and pre-practice and quali and
you put the
press conferences and, you know, hospitality trucks and after parties. There's going to be a bit of rain. Steve's going to get a point. Well, I say no to that.
Ped put the pressure on, and Steve buckled because I listened back to it today. So
that's right. That's what.
But we'll get on to the predictions later.
It's dominating. I'm just saying.
Okay, let's have some EDP F1 pit stops. See, I can do it. I can do DTs.
Can I stay in?
That was basically it.
Can I stay in?
That's basically all he did. Yeah, you can
keep
there.
Good.
Why not? I don't like editing. It takes too long. As anyone who listens to this podcast will appreciate. Let's start. And this is going to be a bit of a bizarre thing to say, I suppose, but it didn't feel like a Mercedes engine wise dominated Grand Prix. It felt like Renault, in terms of the power unit, the gap were closed. Am I deluded?
It seemed like it in qualifying, definitely, but then in the wet, you know, it gets blown wide open. But I was actually impressed with Ferrari, to be honest, because Alonso was up there the whole weekend. He topped one of the practice sessions as well.
Yeah, he looked very good in free practice, didn't he?
And I don't know if that was just trying to him show off, kind of saying, well, you know, team principal's resigned, I've got to do my bit to, you know, for the team, show them what I can do, really.
Well, yeah, just assume it was Stefano
Domenicali.
Thank you. Domenicali's fault, because he went and there was a bit of pace in the Ferrari at last. So, I mean, are we saying that maybe Ferrari and Renault as well, I suppose? a little bit close on the Mercedes powered cars, maybe not Mercedes the team.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say that's fair. There was going to be, but then you look at the team that leads that list, and it's Red Bull, and we're not surprised by that. We expect Red Bull to be quick. So, but I mean, you've got to go a little bit further down, you know, a couple of Red Bulls, and then you know,
because McLaren were out of it really, and Williams. I mean, admittedly, they both got clunked at the start, but which didn't help.
Yeah, no, that's true.
The start was a bit of dodgems, really, wasn't it? It was good. Yeah. It was good fun.
Yeah, it was quite a few clouts, wasn't it? I mean, Rosberg got one, and then did Massa have one or something? That's right. And then there was a few more.
Rosberg
as well,
and Alonso, wasn't it? And Massa, and I can't remember who hit. Was it?
Rosberg hit Bottas. Or the other way round. It was a bit 50-50, how you want to call it. But yeah, that was at the start. Because I just
hit Alonso, didn't he? Because it was hilarious because they were old teammates.
Yeah,
I remember now. It was all flooding.
And he thought, "I'm not going to pull out of this because I don't have to."
Yeah,
let's see where it goes.
Didn't really get him very far, did they?
But I do agree. I watched Sky and had Martin Brundle's commentary, and he said, you know, Massa did just whip across into the middle, and at the start, that is a bold, to use one word to describe it, bold move. But I thought the start was interesting, but it did all kind of just eventually level out. I mean, starts are always good fun. That's what we love watching them. But
they sorted themselves out even before the Grand Prix. The actual race had taken place. Pastor Maldonado had some fun, hadn't he? I mean, I think the assumption was that there was an issue with the car with his first dice, and then he ended up in the pit wall as he was trying to enter the pits. He was sort of saying none of it was his fault, but
from the replays I've seen, he was looking at the steering wheel and forgot to turn it.
That's what I thought.
He was just fiddling with the buttons and suddenly thought, I've spun, and then kind of forgot what he was supposed to be doing in the car, I think.
I mean, he must be providing a lot of money to just simply pay for
cars. I was then about to sort of say, I think if it weren't for the money he brings to the teams, I don't think anyone would sign him. He's just either too jinxed or too accident prone. Or
surely at some point you've got to, as a team, you've got to take a stand against that, haven't you? Though, I mean, it's a finance dominated sport, and of course it is. But at the same time, what you've got to think, you're now between your Lotus, you're between a rock and a hard place. Do you have someone on your team who brings enough money for you to run the team, but you're not going to find any other extra sporting activities or sponsorship opportunities because the person that you've brought in who's giving you the money is putting it in the wall? So no one's going to go, oh yeah, let's get Pastor Maldonado in to promote this product, or let's get Lotus on to sponsor us, or let's do a deal with them because they're a really, really recognised, successful brand. No one's going to be thinking that because you've got an ex-banker and a guy who can't turn a steering wheel. They're not building up that team for success. They're not building the team, and the success starts in the car.
I think it's no coincidence that Maldonado's last two teams are Lotus and Williams, both of whom have been rather short of cash. And he's not been anywhere else, but remarkable. I think it was Joe Sayward who said that the most annoying thing with Pastor Maldonado is he never acknowledges anything's his fault, and therefore he never learns from anything. I think that maybe sums it up a little bit. Good signs from Lotus, possibly. Well, in terms of qualifying, I mean, Grosjean got it up onto Q3, which I predicted. Just jumping ahead of the gun there.
Hey, we said no predictions yet, Mark.
That was getting me excited. I mean, the car clearly hasn't got reliability. No. Is there a little bit of pace?
Yeah, it seems to have come up there. I mean, I never didn't not believe that it wouldn't be a fairly competitive car.
The triple negative, Steve, love it.
But
yeah, agreed.
But, you know, I mean, with their abysmal winter, you know, it was always just going to be reliability, wasn't it? I mean, he lost fourth gear at one stage and then he retired shortly after.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, I think he would have had probably a reasonable finish.
Do we have to do this? Yes, or we retire. And then they just retired anyway, which I suppose maybe sums up where Lotus are at the moment. What other ones did I want to mention? And obviously, if anyone else wants to mention anything, please do. Adrian Sutil. Oh dear. Three DNFs out of three, mostly pretty early on in the race. I mean, that's not really going very well, is it?
No, Sauber actually struggled this season, really. I think Gutierrez is, well, last race he finished 16th, and last season you look at them, they were with Hülkenberg, especially they were fourth, fifth place. They're up there fighting towards the end of it anyway. And this season they've really struggled with it. Are they still running the Ferrari engine? Is that?
No, they're not this year, are they? They're in Renault this year, I think.
Yes, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a big issue for them, and yeah, it's I don't know if this race is not going to see out the season, is it? It's not like he brings much money. I bet
he doesn't. No, he doesn't. And also, Sauber don't really have much to lose. What's going to happen? Can Adrian Sutil and get someone in there? There are people out there who could do with a drive that we would be happy to see on the track that you might think would give them a little bit of a spark. This is normally where I would say Kobayashi, but of course we have him in the paddock this year, which is absolutely great.
Yeah.
But you know, there'd be a couple of drivers out there that I think they could pop into that seat quite easily and expect better things. But it's confounding because I remember at the beginning of the last season when Sutil was driving for Force India and he'd come sort of out of nowhere to get that seat, and he put in some really strong performances, and we were sort of saying, you know, is this the more mature, settled, confident Adrian? No, it's not. No, he's gone, and it went downhill towards the end of last season, at the point when you were just sort of like, oh well, yeah, Adrian's not doing much again, and it's just continued. He hasn't even had a resurgence. I mean, okay, you could say that the car's not underneath him, absolutely fine, but you know, Gutierrez is at least getting it across the line, and Sutil's not even doing that.
When he's not being scooped up and over by Pastor Maldonado, well, which happens to the best of us.
When he's not being flipped like a burger. Yeah.
Hey, we did touch on Red Bull. I think you look at how Lotus have struggled since pre-season testing, it probably emphasises what a good job Red Bull have done in getting it together so quickly. Brilliant fun from Sebastian Vettel and his radio messages. Do we not think? Absolutely wonderful.
It was
tough luck.
It was
yes, Seb. Yes, we'll of course he's going to be like that. We'll come to it later.
No. I agree. We'll come to it later. But that is one of my highlights of the races. Actually, the radio message is not one of my highlights. What happened after, when he did actually get out of the way, was one of my highlights. When Ricardo overtook him. Now you can look at that and think, I think Seb was just sort of saying, I'm going to push you up until the point where I know I can't do it, and then I'm not going to fight anymore. And he let him through. But I can understand what you're saying. He's four-time world champion. But he didn't get to be four-time world champion on his own. He got to be four-time world champion by being with the best team and by having someone in the car next to him who, up until the last season that he was with them, was doing what was best for the team. And as we know, for Mark Webber, what was best for the team was to let Seb pass. And I think Seb needs to get it in his head that you're not going to be the fifth-time world champion this year, most likely, because you don't have the vehicle. You don't have the wheels under you to do that. So what we need is we need to do the best for the team. And that's now, what, two occasions where he's openly defied a radio message? This time verbally, Malaysia last year physically. How long can Red Bull let it go on? And that's an honest question. How long can Red Bull let it go on?
Can I just make a point, just to jump in there? Have we not forgotten it is racing? And it is
absolutely
early on in the season, and there's still all to play for in terms of those two drivers gaining points.
Absolutely.
So if one was faster than the other, which is, I think, was what the radio message is, shouldn't they just let them get on with it? And eventually one should have got past them if they were skilled enough.
Well, as they say in racing, Steve,
catching
is one thing, getting past is another.
Yeah.
And we know Seb Vettel's very difficult to get past. Now, what saying, if you're both given a clear track in the conditions that your cars are on now, Daniel will lap quicker than you, doesn't mean that he's just going to be able to get past him at the drop of a hat if Seb makes it difficult for him. Yes, it's racing, but take away the fact that it's a business. And businesses have hierarchies. And when someone who is above you in your hierarchy tells you to do something and you don't do it, that should lead to discipline. That's basically what I'm saying. You take an order from a superior, you do that, you do what you're told.
I would agree if it was towards the end of the season and it was needed in a points situation like we see in the past. Team orders is a bit grey area, and I would agree grudgingly on that. But this early in the season, when Red Bull probably aren't really in championship contention, shouldn't they just let them get on with it? And surely Ricciardo would have got past them eventually.
I think
anyway,
at this point in 2009 we were saying Red Bull weren't in championship contention because Braun were running away with it. And then look at what happened in the second half of the season. Red Bull were in championship contention. Anything can happen.
Well, Mercedes,
and we know that.
Yeah, Mercedes now they've got to make hay while the sun shines, definitely. Yeah, someone came up to me earlier in the week and said, are they allowed team orders in Formula 1 now? And I suppose it's all just become a sort of seamless. I suppose there are always team orders, it's just they weren't in public before. But do we like that this can happen still, or should they just be left to their own devices?
Well, it's always difficult, because both of what you were saying is, you know, completely correct. And you look at team orders have always been there. I always think back as a Damon Hill fan to 98, the Belgian Grand Prix. And they had the two Jordans, 1-2, and they were catching each other in wet conditions. I remember Damon Hill went on the radio and said, if we fight, we can take each other off. But if you say hold position, we've got a 1-2 here, we've got points, you know, it's going to be a brilliant day. And that's what happened. And I think Red Bull have always been quite almost scared still. I think Turkish Grand Prix, I can't remember what year it was, but they came together, didn't they?
Well, just a bit.
And I remember cheering a lot. It's a bit of a blur. But, you know, I think they've always been kind of a bit worried about that as well. And, I mean, we've seen team orders with Williams already this season, with Bottas and Massa. And Bottas is faster than you, wasn't it?
Yeah, and that was almost defied as well by Massa. I mean, it's interesting.
I'll go on record as being here. I'm not having a go against team orders in terms of the fact that you need to let someone pass, we need to control the result of this race. That's not my point that I'm making. The point that I'm making is, at the end of the day, no one person is bigger than the team. Don't care who you are. Don't care if you're the four-time world champion or if it's your first time stepping into a Formula One car. You are told to do something by the people who pay your wages. You do it. And it's that simple for me.
Love it. Love it. Right, let's move this on. We mentioned Kobayashi briefly. There was this ridiculous situation where the checkered flag came out a lap early, which was mildly amusing for Lewis because he was like, am I done? No, I'm not done. Am I done? I don't know. But probably quite disappointing given that Kobayashi overtook Jules Bianchi on the lap that then didn't count. And so Marussia finished ahead of Caterham. I'd be a little bit annoyed given that, you know, it was a shed. For some reason, the flag came out a lap early.
Yeah.
Kamui.
But that's the thing. I think Kamui will just come out and go, it is what it is. I'll get him next time. You know, he likes to race. I don't think he's going to sit and whine and whinge and moan about it.
Fair enough. And one last point I wanted to mention: 22 cars on the grid, only two didn't finish. And bearing in mind this was only the fourth race of the season, that's a phenomenal
good.
Effort for what they're turning out.
So I seem to remember one Christian Horner saying that we're going to have like half the cars finished for like probably
wacky
the first
races, yeah.
Yeah, for the first half a dozen races or whatever his quote was, you know. So yeah, I mean, it just goes to show, doesn't it?
The unpredictability is over already. Oh dear. Okay, then, we've touched on a few of these, so hopefully this won't take too long. Of the weekend's driver of the weekend, and of course, GOAT of the weekend. Bids, please.
I'll go driver. I'm going to give it to Fernando. He's got no right putting that car on the podium.
Mm-hmm.
Simple as that. But as we've already spoken about, he did a cracker job all weekend.
Kimi was nowhere, great. Was he?
Kimi was nowhere. Kimi was in the top 10, just, I think.
Well, I mean, he literally wasn't nowhere because he did finish.
Well, he did, and he got some points, but he never looked like a threat. He never looked like anything. Whereas Alonso, especially in those opening few laps, he looked like he was on the hunt.
Yeah,
I mean, he was tracking stuff down, and that's the Fernando that we love.
He was
we
back,
love to watch
he?
That, yeah. And back. I think, is it a sign of things to come in the future? Probably not. Ferrari would still continue to struggle, but you know, one thing you can count on with Fernando is when that perfect storm arrives, he is going to ride it.
I've kind of mentioned Maldonado because just of what he just seems like the driver of the weekend because he's just always there and in about it. No, not for any particular good reason, probably for the bad reasons. But
he'd be the GOAT of the weekend.
Well, he would, but then almost the driver of the weekend because it's just Pasta, isn't it?
It's just classic Pasta.
But I think Daniel Ricciardo, just, you know, outperforming Sebastian Vettel again.
Again.
And doing it with such style. There's a bit of class about him as well. I've really become a fan of his. But anyone want to put me right?
Not at all.
No, I think that's...
No, I'd agree with that.
Yeah.
Bloody hell. Yeah. All right.
Although I do have a difference.
To be honest, it makes me question Vettel's talent more. I mean, we all know he's a world champion and he's a good driver. But I wonder if his talent's quite narrow. So if he's in the best car with high downforce and all, you know, everything else... He's good, but when he's come to it where you've actually got to drive, you've got to...
He can't overtake, that's what you're saying, isn't he, Rich?
It's not overtaking, it's just that having being able to like move your talent to stretch over completely kind of new brand of racing or new brand of Formula One, what this is this season, because of course it's slightly less downforce with narrow wings and new engines and everything, you've got more power. So I don't know if he can kind of transfer his talent as well as some of the other guys up there.
I think this is a, brings up a very good point, actually. Something that I was watching the race with a friend of mine, and we talked about it, and we said it's interesting how Ricciardo's managed to make this jump, and he's managed to do it really well, because the one thing that Red Bull were never really known for is that straight line speed, but they've always been known for having that brilliant amount of speed and sticking the corners, and that's where they make up the car handles beautifully. And he's come from Toro Rosso, who the one thing that they're known for is straight line speed. They got like a rocket in a straight line, but the ability to slow the car down and get it around the corners is where they lose a touch, why they're always strong at tracks, like normally quite strong at tracks. We'd have the big straights, so you're looking at Monza and sort of China with the big back straight and stuff like that. You're looking at seeing a good performance from them. So he's managed, as you say, it's those transferable skills. So he's taken that into another type of vehicle, and he's still managing to perform better than Seb. And we've talked about it before on this podcast, and I think, Richard, what you're saying is exactly right. Seb is a fantastic driver, but is he a fantastic racer? And I think the paddock is divided into two types of people. You've got your drivers and you've got your racers. And I don't think Seb is the best racer on the grid.
I don't know. I thought he was pretty racy last year, albeit in a completely dominant car. So,
and that's it. That's him being a driver. Yeah. It's very rare that you see him actually have to race and scrap. Like, think back to Lewis Hamilton and Felipe Massa going against each other in the McLaren and the Ferrari that never were going to scrap against the Red Bull, but against each other there was that, you know, they pushed the cars beyond their limits. And that's what we see from drivers like Hamilton, that's what we see from people like Alonso, and that's why we say those guys are the real racers.
We shall see. How about you, Steve? Who you've got for racer driver of the weekend?
I nearly considered actually going with Alonso, but I'm actually going to go with Rosberg. You know, for a difficult Saturday and a difficult start, to get back in a second, and let's not forget he had no telemetry.
Yeah,
racing blind, as they so put it. So I'm going to have to go with him on that one.
Yeah. He did make the shortlist. He did make the
definitely,
shortlist.
Definitely, yeah. No, I think he had a cracking weekend, really, even though he looked mortified at the end of it. Goat? Did anyone have a goat that they wanted to submit?
Maldonado.
For the sacrifice? Maldonado.
It's just Maldonado.
It is just Maldonado.
And again, we've already talked about Sutil. Just, you know, three DNFs, I think.
Maybe we should just call it Maldonado of the weekend. And then Pastor of the weekend.
He finished the race, but I mean...
He did?
He started
again
at the back and he got to 14th. Maldonado.
Flying.
So
probably almost by accident.
Roman.
I'd probably say he didn't realise where he was.
Roman didn't finish the race, so, you know. So did Max, of course. Max toured it in. So, you know, that obviously counts for something. Team of the weekend.
No one really jumped out at me, apart from obviously Mercedes, which is the sort of fairly obvious one.
Yeah, it's a tricky one at the moment. Ferrari, I thought, for dealing with, obviously, they've got Marco Mattiacci. So they turned everything around, really, I thought, given it would have been a bit of a tough start to the season.
Yeah, definitely.
Can have a bit of them for team of the weekend, maybe. That leaves highlight... We kind of mentioned Vettel.
Yeah, I'll go with
radio message. Which made me smile. Anyone else? Anything else that stuck out?
You had Massa's pit stops, but I don't know if you'd really call that a highlight. Really, probably more disappointing for him.
Yeah, seeing him sit there.
Yeah.
You know, when you open your visor,
when you lift the visor up to really give someone a glare.
And then it wasn't not only that the tyres were the wrong way round; it's that they then couldn't get the nut off. I mean, it's like just a calamity.
Well, to be fair, it's because he had a bit of a whack on
that
tyre.
Accident, wasn't it?
Good point. All right, we'll let them off for that. Let's end this podcast then, shall we? Thanks, gents, for your time. We'll be back with our preview of España, the Barcelona Grand Prix, or Spanish Grand Prix at Barcelona, in Barcelona, that sort of stuff. Back for that in a bit, but we should do the plugs, as usual, which I still haven't recorded, Ped. Sorry, probably won't happen either.
No.
EDP24.co.uk/F1. For the latest Formula 1 stuff. I haven't done a Formula 1 column for the paper this week, but there'll be one next week, which is the first week of May? I think it is, isn't it? Sort of in between the April-May changeover, as I've decided to call it just then. EDPF1 is the Twitter handle as well. You can get us there, and you can get me at Michael J. Bailey. How about you, Rich?
My Twitter is @Bax_kid.
Lovely. Steve, you're still not there. Did you have many hashtag Ask Steve questions?
I've had some problems with my Twitter on my phone, and I very rarely turn on my computer. So it's possible that there have been some, but unlikely.
Well, we'll get that involved on the EDP.
We'll do that. Yeah,
F102.
But if you want to, you can get me at PedHD56 and use the hashtag Ask Steve to get Steve Rush.
Beautiful. We shall do that. Well, hopefully you will do that, because we just talk to each other. So, but we might do that as well. Anyway, let's go. Thanks for listening. We'll be back soon. Bye for now.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.